is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Turkey, Syria, the earthquake, 7.8 followed by 7.7. Right now, the collapse of communication, the collapse of the freshwater system, the cold in the evening, the night, the thousands who are without food and sustenance, the people still buried in the collapsed cities. It was very early in the morning, so people were sleeping. There was no opportunity to get out. A catastrophe of European scale. Rescue coming from out everywhere. The U.S., Israel, Germany. Certainly Germany is paralyzed because of the large Turkish population. But before the earthquake and after the earthquake, President Erdogan. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, because the earthquake now introduces another twist to the story of Erdogan's campaign to get reelected in May of this year. Erdogan has declared three-month emergency powers in this region and elsewhere through Turkey. That would take him up to the election. This is the southernmost part of Turkey, bordering on Syria. The earthquake also moved into Syria and damaged the ancient city of Aleppo, including the enclave where the resistance remains, the jihadist resistance, etc., to the Assad regime. There's no good reporting from there. So I mentioned the catastrophe of the earthquake because it's part now of the calculus as to what is to be done about Erdogan, who is resisting unanimity in NATO when it comes to Sweden and Finland joining, and other, what you'd have to say, hesitations about Ukraine. Gregory, a very good evening to you. The earthquake is a catastrophe. Over these next days, we will see the bodies and the people rescued from the rubble. What does this mean to Erdogan's power? Because he's campaigning very hard for re-election.
Yes, in fact, the election is June 18. So he's got the option for extending that state of emergency to possibly delay the election. Certainly, Erdogan is using this incredible tragedy to make himself look like the only shining beacon of hope at a time of crisis. Now, I'm not saying that the Turkish people would buy that, but he is certainly using it to if you like, say that we all have to rally behind the leadership, and that's what this state of emergency is all about. But you don't really need a state of emergency in the broader sense to handle a crisis like this. Certainly, you need to have the legal authority to mobilize all of the humanitarian support to rescue people, to restore electricity and water and the like. But we see from Erdogan's early statements that he is using this to say that he is going to help the Turkish citizens, but not the terrorists. In other words, if you're Kurdish, don't count on any help. And that's where he's using this as coded language to attack the Kurdish populations who are across the Syrian border in Aleppo and Idlib and the like, and also to handle the Kurds who may be across in the impacted areas of Iraq. So this is one of the opportunities for Erdogan to be the great leader at a time of crisis, because let's face it, he's proved that he doesn't care about the welfare or of the people of Turkey or the economy of Turkey. What it may do is it may delay Erdogan's need or perceived need to start accelerating military attacks on Greek-occupied areas of the Aegean Sea. And that was planned to be escalated in this time frame leading up to the election. He's made a lot of threats about that. He's intimated that he would actually occupy Greek islands in the Aegean, which are, many of which are just off the Turkish coast and would be easy to take. He needs to do something about that if he's going to use that as an excuse, whilst he can, because the Greek Air Force and Greek Navy are making great strides in the acquisition of new aircraft and new ships, including the acquisition of F-35s, the acquisition of the F-16 Vipers, which have been so far denied to Turkey, and that includes the not just the F-16 Vipers, but also the F-35s. So basically, Erdogan is desperately looking around for things that are going to save him and make him look strong. Yes, included in that is his continued suggestion that he is going to deny NATO entry to Sweden. And as you know, Finland has said it won't join NATO without Sweden because of the contiguity of the land areas and the like. The reality is that this whole bluster by Erdogan might have saved Sweden and Turkey, Sweden and Finland from having to join NATO, because NATO would cost them a lot of money. And at this stage, it's questionable to see whether it would be a vital defense of those countries against possible Russian expansionism. The fear of Russian expansion as a result of the Ukraine war has actually diminished somewhat since the initial hysteria of middle to late last year, when there was a great fear that that NATO was about to be invaded. So at that point, when Erdogan held up deliberately as a NATO member, held up the entry of Sweden and Finland into Turkey, it was fairly cynical. But now that threat may be losing its leverage.
Part of the puzzle about Turkey as a member of NATO is its relationship with Moscow in this conflict. It would appear that blocking Sweden, and now that means Finland doesn't join, it would appear that favors Moscow. Does Turkey favor Moscow? Can we tell?
Oh, there's no question that right now the only absolutely essential partner state to Turkey is Russia, and behind that, the next essential ally would be the People's Republic of China, and after that, you could say the NATO states. You look at the attacks made in the last few days against the United States by the Turkish foreign minister, makes it very, very clear that Turkey is really contemptuous of the West, contemptuous of the United States, and believes that it can get away with that stage because NATO theoretically can't afford to see Turkey disappear under the Russian mantle. What we forget, of course, is that Erdogan and Turkey themselves do not wish to be solely under the protection of Moscow or for that matter, Beijing. Right now, what they need is a foot in both camps, but the heaviest foot is in the Russian camp, because Russia is giving them what they need in terms of defense equipment and other things, whereas NATO is quite rightly holding back on reinforcing the dictatorship of Erdogan by giving him advanced Western weapons, which would be technologically compromised in any event.
Therefore, this catastrophe in southern Turkey, do you see this as favoring Erdogan's reelection? He was said to be in trouble because of the economy. Does this neutralize the economy? They're going to have months, if not years, of rebuilding.
Yeah. In fact, it gives him an excuse to blame Turkey's economic condition on the earthquake. But most Turks are well aware that the situation had become critical even before the earthquake. So, yes, it might give him an opportunity to blame someone else. Whether that will work is questionable. At this stage, what is saving Erdogan is the fact that we haven't seen a clear and charismatic opponent emerge in for these June elections. And I think we're going to start to see that happening in the next few days. But Erdogan will use this state of emergency to suppress political activity by anyone who criticizes him. So he'll basically say that it's immoral and unlawful for people to criticize the government at a time of national crisis when we should all be unified behind the government. And that has a lot of weight. But the reality is that the Turkish people feel very bitter towards the government. They've lost the value of the Turkish lira. by well over 50% in the last year or so. They've seen the collapse of the housing market. They've seen inflation at around 100% or so. This is catastrophic economic news, and the earthquake, of course, just worsens that. Yet at the same time, Erdogan is committing more and more funds to the development of very, very high-cost prestige defense items, such as a new sixth-generation fighter, new warships, including an aircraft carrier and the like. So he's basically looking at personal aggrandizement ahead of the welfare of the population, and the population knows it.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to Africa. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.